Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Have a lot of subjects to discuss in this and in subsequent commentaries. So much has gone on in the recent past. Big-time efforts at censoring the internet, censoring YouTube videos. Thank you very much. I'm now on that list where one of my videos has been put on restricted viewing, and I'll talk about that one. No wonder, considering the subject matter and how relevant it is to today's current events and how the things that myself and others were talking about a little short of two years ago, has so much relevance to today. I'll talk a bit about that. I'll talk about the never-ending efforts at creating a civil war situation in America and in the West in general, but particularly in America. And I'm going to harken back to the American Civil War, and I'm going to talk about this fantastic YouTube channel. I've always been more interested in the battles and the campaigns of the American Civil War, to a lesser degree, the reasons for the Civil War. I've always known that the states had the right to leave the Union, no different than they had the right to enter the Union. I was never in dispute with that basic fact, but it was hardly possible, in my view, to ignore the slavery aspect, because indeed some of the top Confederate generals, General John Gordon, General Wade Hampton, General Nathan Bedford Forrest, and others, these were outstanding combat commanders that commanded thousands of troops. They were slaveholders, and they made quite a good living for themselves. However, the history has been so changed and has been so distorted that if the truth were to come out about a lot of the things prior to and during the American Civil War, it would stand everything on its head. For example, just a little sneak preview, black Confederate soldiers, outstanding black Confederate soldiers. Okay, that throws a monkey wrench into the whole slavery narrative right off the bat. Similar in a way to the hundreds of thousands of Jews who served in the Wehrmacht during World War II. That's another monkey wrench, another spanner in the works about how things that really occurred throw a monkey wrench and a twist into current narratives. So I'll talk a bit about that. I'll talk a bit about how the internet censorship hammer is coming down. What happened to David Icke in Australia, and a lot of people blowing smoke about, oh, this is the end of free speech in Australia. No. There were things that happened long before that. Christopher Boyce, Nugan Hand, bank drug trafficking scandal, Pine Gap, all kinds of stuff. Going back to World War II, when Australia basically relinquished all of their control for all intents and purposes to the Americans, particularly General MacArthur. That was a huge mistake, in my view. Anyhow, on with the program. In the past, you heard me talk about the Kansas-Nebraska Act and how alleged abolitionists, there was a time when I really believed that the people in control didn't want this to happen, and what that is was the spread of slavery into what became the Kansas-Nebraska territories and states later. Well, what I learned from my recent studies, and mea culpa, I should have known better than to trust so many establishment historian books that stated, oh, the whole Kansas-Nebraska Act and all the scandals and all the controversy that erupted out of that, ultimately it was to stop the spread of slavery into those new territories taken from the Native Americans. What I found out was, and this is again why you won't find this stuff in establishment history books and why I should have known better, Donald Livingston made a series of lecture presentations for the Abilene Institute, and we'll provide the links to some of these key lectures, because I learned so much. In the first place, slavery, Southern slavery, made an immense profit with Northern states like New York and Massachusetts and the New England states. The New England states profited enormously from the Southern institution of slavery, because it dealt in particular cotton industry, the fabrics industry, etc., etc. Donald Livingston also pointed out that the South had a very strong economy, right? And I was one of those that were duped with this notion that, oh, the South, they were just an agricultural society. They depended on slaves to do all their dirty work for them, etc., etc. Well, it turned out that a lot of commerce, a huge financial boost, came from the South into the northern states. And just think of all the commerce, traffic of all the rivers, especially in what became the Western Theater in the American Civil War. All those rivers provided commerce and made commerce possible between the Mid-South and the South and the North. That's a lot of money, and the South was self-sustaining. What the aforementioned Kansas-Nebraska Act was really all about was not to prevent the spread of slavery, the institution of using blacks as slaves in the new territory soon to become states. The real reason, as pointed out by Don Livingston in these outstanding series of lectures, and by no means is he the only lecturer that gives outstanding interviews. You will find many on that channel. I'll talk about some of the other ones too. Through the study of actual sources and materials and documents from that era, Livingston concluded, and he read quotes too from these high-powered northern politicians. The real reason behind the Kansas-Nebraska Act was to keep blacks out of the new territories soon to become states. These guys were the ultimate racist. No, we don't want any Negroes there. That's what they were really saying. They didn't say we don't want slaves there. We don't want the spread of slavery, the practice of slavery into those new areas. We don't want blacks there, period. Okay, and again, that adds a whole nother twist to all this, because nowadays with the race baiting, everyone's screaming racism about this, victim identity politics, and now just about every kind of ethnic culture, every kind of gender you can think of or make up, someone's going to be offended about something. And that's the whole idea behind all this. To the point now where you can't even question narratives in any way, like Christchurch, for example, because you're denying, and I'll talk about this because it's now in YouTube's guidelines, of denying well-documented events. And there's that term, denying again. And then that's spread out to, oh, climate change deniers and science deniers. Oh, because the science is settled, don't you know that? You're a science denier. Now, deniers of events, which the controlled corporate media puts out from one perspective and one perspective only. So any suggestion that, wait a minute, you guys have a crappy track record as far as the truth is concerned, and let me make up my own mind about this, F you very much. Oh no, that's all in the camp of denial now. Everything is denial, denial, denial. You're an evil person. You're a denialist, okay? A denialist. And then yet you track back to the original purpose behind the Kansas-Nebraska Act. It was to keep blacks out of the whole western part of the United States. So, who are the real racists here? And before I continue talking about some of the other things that came up in Abilene Institute discussions, and we're talking about black scholars and black archivists and experts who are talking about from what they have learned, from not only from actual eyewitness accounts, documents, letters, testimony, but from within their family institutional memory and institutional knowledge. These are black scholars. These are black lecturers. They're pointing out that there was a tradition of blacks living happily in the South. And many of them did not have this harsh view of, to be sure, as is the case today, some slave owners are going to be worse than others. But some blacks got along quite happily with their quote unquote masters. And to the point where the cultural Marxists have started, and it's been going on for some time now, tearing down any statue or any historical reference to blacks in Confederate service, Confederate military service, because that doesn't fit with the narrative. And the whole thing about race baiting, when you think about what a crown corporation is, okay, the United States is a crown corporation originally. A lot of the places where the various trading companies, the Hudson Bay Trading Company, Virginia Trading Company, etc., etc., they went all over the world, South Africa, India, East India Trading Company is a notorious one. They weren't working so much for the British government. No, they were a crown corporation working for the tribalist collectivists, using the British Royal Navy, the Royal Marines, and the Redcoat Army, the British Army, as their muscle. And to carry on what Rudyard Kipling referred to as the white man's burden of supposedly civilizing all these colored people in the process of wiping a lot of them out. I don't know, it's kind of contradictory to me, but so who was the original racist here? It was the tribalist collectivist owned crown corporations that went around all over the world and America with the muscle of the British Army and British military, British Navy behind it. And they're the ones that went around slaughtering all these colored peoples of various ethnicities all over the place, Africa, Asia. And then that spread out to Latin America that became the USA's happy hunting ground, bearing the white man's burden, Southeast Asia. Everywhere were these people of color, these corporations backed by the military. It's always that first. To say that the government wants to do things and then the corporations follow, that's like, you know, putting the cart before the horse. That's not how it works in the real world. And this goes back centuries with these crown corporations. So they were the original racist. They were the ones that originally came and colonized and exploited all these countries of their natural resources and then used a lot of slaves, quite frankly, slaves and indentured servants. And then fast forward to the current time. Nowadays, they're saying, oh, you know, their descendants are saying everything is racist now. Everything is racist. Crown corporations. Australia is a crown corporation. Canada is a crown corporation. New Zealand is a crown corporation. The USA is a crown corporation. And there are myriad smaller crown corporations for that. Virginia Trading Company, etc., etc. So you are a denialist for denying the official Christchurch narrative in any way, shape, or form. And you're also a racist because you don't care about what happened to the Muslims over there. And you oppose unlimited legal immigration. Everyone's screaming their lips off about illegal immigration. It's the legal immigration where the West is being flooded by these people that are bent on completely subverting the will and taking over and imposing their culture and beliefs on the host population. But the immigrants will still ultimately be under control. They'll still be under the thraldom of their tribalist collectivist masters. So it doesn't matter to the latter who's doing the oppressing and who's imposing the thought police, thought control. It could be brown-skinned people. It could be white-skinned people. It doesn't matter to them as long as the job is done. Moreover, since the tribalist collectivists are hell-bent on eradicating the white race and merging what's left of the whites with all the immigrants they're bringing in from the so-called third world, well, that makes it, from their scheme of things, their point of view, it's going to be the brown people that they're going to be using to undo all these traces of European civilization and everything else. It's just a reversion back to a very dark, harsh time, right? That's what it's all about. With a AI high-tech overlay on top of that, the good citizens of those countries thus affected, thus being hammered by the unlimited immigration, the imposition of harsh Abrahamic, let's call it, laws, they'll be too busy trying to avoid being gang-raped and murdered and stabbed from all these imported immigrants. They'll be too busy trying to stay alive. They won't have time to think of rebellion or fomenting rebellion or any kind of dissent, any kind of dissension. That's the plan, anyway. Whether it works out in the long run remains to be seen. Because people have just had a gutful of all this. That's, again, that's a big part of what the original Yellow Vest movement was all about. A number of the leaders of Eastern European countries have been very vocal about their opposition to mass unlimited immigration. Kudos to them. And of course, they've been vilified, and there are now efforts underway, have been for some time, to get rid of these dissenters, right? But it remains to be seen whether this plan of theirs will come into effect, because the cracks are starting to show. The decay has set in as far as the controlling elite are concerned. They can no longer control all the events all the time. And I really believe, and I'll get into this more later, preventing David Icke from coming to Australia was a major strategic mistake, because it... They really, really messed up that time. The powers that be and want to remain, they've made some big-time mistakes, major strategic errors. You look at all the backtracking and all the spin control they're doing with the Yellow Vest. The mainstream, lamestream media keeps trying to paint everyone in the Yellow Vest movement as being a freeloading commie wanting entitlements and handouts, right? When actually, if you read some of the demands of the original core group of Yellow Vests, they don't want the IMF, they don't want unlimited immigration, they don't want to deal with these, they want all these banking cartels to go away, okay? I mean, socialists, commies, brainwashed social justice warriors, they don't talk like that, okay? All that stuff is either too politically incorrect to talk about, or they're so oblivious and dumbed down, they don't realize those are real issues, right? They get them mad at something else, get them mad at a MAGA sticker or a, you know, a Donald Trump hat or something. Here is an example of where the cracks are starting to show. I talked earlier about the Southern Poverty Law Center. For a long time, a Zionist attack dog in America. They even put the Family Research Council on their list of hate groups. YouTube, Google, the controlled corporate media are forever blowing smoke about how, oh, these conspiracy theorists, they incite violence, blah, 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 quack, 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 hiss, hiss, hiss. But it's all right when the Southern Poverty Law Center lists the Family Research Council, basically a pro-life group that is against same-day birth abortions, right? I mean, killing babies after they're born, they're against that, as well as all forms of abortion. Understandable. If you want the human race to continue, I mean, one should have a similar or the same mindset as these people. It doesn't matter what their religious or Christian beliefs are. But SPLC lists them as a hate group, and what happens? Some whack job decides he wants to go and gun down the people in the Family Research Council. He was arrested, and he told law enforcement, oh, the reason why I chose the Family Research Council to want to attack is because they're listed as a hate group in Southern Poverty Law Center. So it's okay for them to foment and incite violence against groups they don't like. This happens all the time with, you know, this open call for social justice warriors to attack members of the Trump administration and, you know, attack people who are just minding their own business in a coffee shop who happen to wear a Trump shirt or something like that. That's okay. But since everything is an inversion, oh, they're going to use the fear of inciting violence, conspiracy theorists inciting violence as an excuse to shut down the internet. And I'll get into more detail about how the ways they're going about doing it now. And it has everything to do with intentionally, not too long ago, creating this meme of fake hoaxed events using crisis actors, et cetera, et cetera. It was all set up to do a bait and switch and pull the plug. Now, and getting back to the Southern Poverty Law Center, I'll read you some interesting articles. It's interesting how they use the term Southern poverty. One of the things I learned from watching these videos from these very knowledgeable people about Southern heritage, what really went on in the South prior to and during and after the American Civil War, the invasion of the South by the Federal armies. I mentioned earlier that the South was self-sustainable, contrary to all the myths and all the nonsense we were fed about the South just being an agrarian society, which I bought into at one point, mea culpa. It was quite the opposite. The northern states, New York, New England, Boston, a lot of the states near the Mid-South, the northern states, they made quite a lot of money, generated quite a lot of commerce working with the southern states. And after the American Civil War, what happened? Reparations were forced out of the southern states. For decades, if not a whole century afterward at least, the southern states were still paying like a restitution, a compensation, if you will, to the federal government. And we saw the same thing with how Germany was scapegoated as being the villains and the masterminds behind World War I, when that is complete nonsense. And then Germany was stuck with these onerous reparations that would just fleece the country of its lifeblood, of its livelihood, and stuck Germany with all kinds of mega reparations. First of all, they had to accept war guilt, and then on top of that, they had to pay out all these reparations. Give up all this land that was German to begin with. Well, something like that happened to the southern states. And the southern states, for decades after the American Civil War, were still paying the federal government compensation, restitution, call it what you will. And then SPLC comes along. They have the nerve to call their organization the Southern Poverty Law Center. And they're just laughing in the face of all the people in the South, all the people that they've manipulated. Okay, here's some interesting articles. And the downfall of Southern Poverty Law Center is a milestone, because they cannot stop their own internal rot. They can't stop their open, flagrant abuse of power and manipulation. This article is from Tyler Durden with Zero Hedge. Okay, here we go. SPLC implodes. President and legal director resign amid sexual misconduct scandal. Dateline March 23rd, 2019. Okay, so this is quite recent. The Southern Poverty Law Center, the, quote, vicious left-wing attack dog, unquote, used by the likes of Facebook, Twitter, Google, and Amazon to identify, quote, unquote, hate groups, is unraveling. A week after co-founder Morris Deese was ousted over sexual misconduct claims, with two dozen employees signing a letter of concern over, quote, allegations of mistreatment, sexual harassment, gender discrimination, and racism. Ye, these friggin' hypocrites. The head of the SPLC, Richard Cohen, as well as the organization's legal director, Rhonda Brownstein, resigned on Friday. Cohen had been with the organization 33 years and was one of its most prominent figures. At 5:03 p.m. Friday, Cohen sent a message to staff with the subject line, "Stepping down," announcing that he, too, would be leaving the organization that he and Deese had turned into a research and fundraising juggernaut. "Whatever problems exist at the SPLC happened on my watch, so I take responsibility for them," Cohen wrote, while asking the staff to avoid jumping to conclusions before the board completes an internal review of the Montgomery, Alabama organization's work culture, from the LA Times. Earlier this week, the SPLC board of directors appointed Michelle Obama's former chief of staff, Tina Chen, a Chinese-looking person, who in an unrelated matter unsuccessfully tried to pull strings and have the Jussie Smollett case transferred from the Chicago PD to the FBI. Chen is heading up the inquiry into the sexual misconduct claims. Of course, they put a minority face on there, right, to kind of smooth over all the allegations of racism. They're the ones, SPLC and their ilk are always the ones screaming racism, screaming gender intolerance, etc., etc. It's very much like the pot calling the kettle black. Also out on Friday was Rhonda Braunstein, who had worked with the organization for nearly three decades, according to the Montgomery Advertiser's Melissa Brown. Inside the SPLC scam, as the Washington Examiner's Beckett Adams writes, the Southern Poverty Law Center is a scam which has taken no care whatsoever for the reputational and personal harm it causes by lumping Christians and anti-extremist activists with actual neo-Nazis. As it turns out, the SPLC is a cynical money-making scheme, according to a former staffer's blistering tell-all published this week in The New Yorker. The center's chief goal is to bilk naive and wealthy donors who believe it's an earnest effort to combat bigotry. The only thing worse than a snarling partisan activist is a slimy con man who merely pretends to be one, from the Washington Examiner. Outside of work, recalls Bob Moser of his days working for the organization, we spent a lot of time drinking and dishing in Montgomery bars and restaurants about the hyperbolic fundraising appeals and the fact that although the center claimed to be effective in fighting extremism, hate always continued to be on the rise, more dangerous than ever, with each year's report on hate groups. The SPLC making hate pay, we'd say. It was hard for many of us not to feel like we'd become pawns in what was, in many respects, a highly profitable scam. Well, this Moser guy is trying to, you know, divest himself of any responsibility. And it's run by tribalist collectives. Just look at all the names of these people, Braunstein and Cohen, and right? And in another article, they say, oh, you know what? We're all white people. No, no. What this part of the scam was that the blacks and the other so-called minorities in SPLC, they never got beyond minion status. They were always like these minions, these lower-level underlings. They never got into the upper echelons. Of course, that's how these things work, right? And so what the SPLC guys were saying is, oh, no, you know, we're equal opportunity. You know, we just happen to be a bunch of white guys. No, you're not a bunch of white guys, all right? Let's get that part straight. You're tribalist collectivists. You're trying to destroy the white race. What are you talking about, you white guys? Okay, here's the article again. The way Moser tells it, the center's chief founder, Morris Dees, who was dismissed unceremoniously last week for unspecified reasons, discovered early on that he could rake in boatloads of cash by convincing, quote, gullible northern liberals, unquote, that his group is doing the hard work of fighting, quote unquote, hate. But the center's supposed mission of combating bigotry doesn't actually matter to its top brass, Moser says. It's just a business choice and one that has been extremely lucrative throughout the years. They're trying to make it seem in this tell-all article that is being highlighted here in the Zero Hedge article. Oh, it's really just about making money and ripping people off. No, of course, SPLC is there to be an attack dog and call everyone a racist, call everyone a denialist, call everyone a neo-Nazi who's out there actually exposing this mega fraud, mega crime that's going on. We just run our business like a business. Whether you're selling cakes or causes, it's all the same. Moser claims that the SPLC's business model centers entirely around keeping its precious donors in constant fear using gimmicks such as hate maps and hate list. The center continues to take in far more than it spends, and it still tends to emphasize splashy cases that are sure to draw national attention. He writes, adding, the group's central strategy involves taking on cases guaranteed to make headlines and inflame the far right, while demonstrating to potential donors that the center has not only all the right enemies, but also the grit and know-how to take them down. Moser adds, there is an inescapable sense of guilt that comes with thinking about the legions of donors who believe their money was being used faithfully and well to do the Lord's work in the heart of Dixie. We were part of the con and we knew it. Who knew you could make big bucks simply by lumping A.N. Hirsu Ali and Ben Carson with actual honest-to-God neo-Nazis? That's from the Washington Examiner. Right-wing commentator and Vice co-founder Gavin McInnes is currently suing the SPLC for labeling his right-wing fraternal organization, the Proud Boys, a hate group. implosion big time. That's what I see with that. And here's another interesting article that only tells part of the story. This article is from the New American, thenewamerican.com, Dateline 22 March 2019. And the article reads, "The Southern Poverty Law Center was long ago exposed as a money-making scam. It has amassed almost half $1 billion fighting an imaginary tide of, quote, hate that is ever rising, which provides the twin benefits of bringing in that money and advancing the totalitarian goals of the radical left. Topping that agenda is demonizing any opposition to the left as hate, be it racism, homophobia, transphobia, and Islamophobia. But last week, the discredited group fired its co-founder, Morris Deese, a shocker in the civil rights community that opened the door to discussing exactly who Deese is and what goes on at SPLC, also called the Poverty Palace. Former SPLC staff member Bob Moser took to the New Yorker yesterday to elaborate on what we've known for some time. The SPLC is, again, a money-making scam, but he revealed that truth from the inside. Until justice rolls down like dollars. A detailed report in the Los Angeles Times explained that SPLC fired Deese likely because of the long-term abuse of women and blacks at the organization. Now, let me read that again. A detailed report in the Los Angeles Times explained that SPLC fired Deese likely because of the long-term abuse of women and blacks at the organization. Stephen Bright, a Yale law professor and former director of the Southern Center for Human Rights in Atlanta, told the Times that SPLC's fundraising is fraudulent and calls Deese a flimflam man. And he's managed to flimflam his way along for many years raising money by telling people about the Ku Klux Klan and hate groups, he said. He sort of goes to whatever will sell and has, of course, brought in millions and millions and millions of dollars. The flimflam man's career is officially over, and Moser offers a few insights that open with an amusing but telling vignette. Quote, I've been thinking about the jokes my SPLC colleagues and I used to tell to keep ourselves sane. Walking to lunch past the center's Maya Lin-designed memorial to civil rights martyrs, we cast a glance at the inscription from Martin Luther King Jr., etched into the black marble, quote, until justice rolls down like waters, and in tone in our deepest voices, until justice rolls down like dollars. The Law Center had a way of turning idealists into cynics. Working in a building that, quote, made social justice look despotic, the earnest young leftist quickly learned that fighting hate involved a lot of hypocrisy and a lot more money. Of the hypocrisy, Moser wrote, blacks at SPLC were almost uniformly, quote, administrative and support staff, the help. One of my black colleagues said pointedly, but the professional staff, the lawyers, researchers, educators, public relations officers, and fundraisers were almost exclusively white. Just two staffers, including me, said Moser, were openly gay. Well, first of all, like I said earlier, they're not exclusively white. Okay, that's a misnomer right there. Oh, look at the hypocrisy. Sexism towards the women, racism and discrimination against the blacks who were uniformly in administrative and support roles. They were the help, one of my black colleagues said pointedly, right? They're the underlings. You want to really take a cynical view, they're the house Negroes, as far as the SPLC was concerned. They put in just enough blacks to make it look like they were equal opportunity, but equal and opportunity, just more made up scam words from this mob. And by this mob, I mean all of these socialist, progressives, cultural Marxist society wreckers. Article goes on to say, outside of work, we spent a lot of time drinking and dishing in Montgomery's bars and restaurants about the oppressive security regime, the hyperbolic fundraising appeals, and the fact that though the center claimed to be effective in fighting extremism, hate always continues to be on the rise, more dangerous than ever, with each year's report on hate groups, the SPLC making hate pay, we'd say. It wasn't funny then. At this moment, it seems even grimmer. but Moser and his co-workers participated in the making hate pay. No objections at all to what SPLC did. Not once in this half-apology for joining this massive fraud did Moser express sorrow for helping smear innocent conservatives. Aside from defaming mainstream conservatives, SPLC's application of the hate group label inspired an attempted mass murder at the Family Research Council. As I talked about that earlier. Of the money-making, Moser quotes another of Dee's critics who says Dee's viewed civil rights work mainly as a marketing tool for bilking gullible northern liberals. Unquote. So beyond Dee's having a reputation for hitting on young women, SPLC is just a storefront for selling the fight against hate to make a pile of money. A former staff member said to Moser that the SPLC was a virtual buffet of injustices. And SPLC has gone down. Go away, you meddlesome fly. I mentioned earlier I had this restricted viewing thing from YouTube. And I'm going to talk a bit about that now, and it'll segue into the members section where I'm going to talk about what happened to David Icke, how that was a bad move on the powers that want to be. I'm going to talk about Christopher Boyce, other things that happened in Australia long before David Icke. This notion that, oh, they lost freedom of speech because of what happened to David Icke, that's ridiculous. It happened a long time ago, and I'm going to get into that. It was the loss of autonomy as far as the sovereign determination of the country was concerned. I'm going to also talk about how Great Britain just went and set off a bunch of nuclear bombs in and around Australia, with Australia having not really much to say about the matter. That's a whole nother issue. So I just want to put the rest of this notion that, oh, we suddenly lost our freedom of speech in Australia because of the powers that be banning David Icke's entry into Australia. Kudos to David for continuing the great work and putting all this information out. But what happened to him was not the start, and it was certainly not the end of what's going to happen in Australia and the rest of the world. Unless the tide turns and we divest ourselves of these wannabe rulers. I mentioned at the outset that I was on the receiving end of restrictions from YouTube based on the content of some of my videos. So here's what happened. A few days ago, I was checking my email, and lo and behold, there's something from YouTube that says in the subject line, your video has been restricted, or some words to that effect, restricted viewing, something or other. So I click on it and I start reading, and then it says, and it doesn't specify which video, it just gives me a time frame, a date. Such and such video of such and such date has been deemed offensive, yada, yada, yada. But if people want to view it, they can still view it. Okay, what it means is when you click on it, there will be this message that pops up advising you of this really bad, horrible content and how offensive it is and everything else. So I look at the video and I determine, oh, well, it has to do with the May 31st, 2017 commentary I did about... It was the second of two parts about Manchester. And I was talking about how Manchester was a hybrid event. How the so-called truther community had been gulled into thinking that every time one of these things happens, whether it's Manchester and since then Mandalay Bay and since then Christchurch and all these other deep state activities in between that all have to do with gun control, of necessity... The truther community, many of them, just assume that it's a hoax. And they don't have their terminology correct. Some of these, I don't know if I was the first one or someone else may have come up with the idea of a hybrid event where it's hoaxed insofar as the the imagery, the video, the testimony, the eyewitnesses we're seeing are all fake, but something really happened. A deep state black op really happened, and people were killed, right? So what I was pointing out in the May 31st, 2017 commentary, and this was a second of a two-part commentary the previous week I talked about in Manchester, and I wanted to get across to the listeners the importance of differentiating between a hoaxed event and a false flag event. Okay, a false flag, we know the pattern. They get a patsy or patsies, think of the brothers, unfortunate brothers in Boston, and they become the scapegoat. It's a bullfrog's chorus with the media. These people did it, these people did it, these people did it. And Boston was clearly a hoaxed event, though. We've seen the video of the flags blowing. I mean, that was all special effects. We've seen the videos of the people laying there, many of them with fake wounds, with fake blood on the ground. Some of the people were known to be crisis actors. The military actually has a pool of veterans who've lost their limbs and who take part in these reenactments, or rather these stage events simulating mass casualty events. And that's what they use a lot of these people for, who have prosthetics, who have missing limbs, etc., etc. The point of relevance is that what they've done is they've inculcated in the minds of a lot of these so-called truthers the notion that, oh, these are all fake hoaxed events. No one was really killed. These are all crisis actors. Here's a link showing that there was an ad going out a few weeks before this event seeking crisis actors for a drill or something, which actually turned out being very similar to the event or events being highlighted by the media as another gun event, as another event when people were shot down, as another event which cries out for gun control. So I talk about this at length in that Manchester video, and what happens? YouTube censors that video. Now let me read you some of the comments, or rather some of the sentences from that YouTube email. And I would appreciate it if you, my dear listeners, would write to YouTube and tell them that this is clearly an example of racism, where because merely by the dint of the color of my skin, YouTube has decided to place restrictions on my video. And also on a number of my other videos, suddenly there's all these copyright claims, which is absurd, because there's no copyright on any of this information. If people want to talk about alien abductions or my lab experiences or anything else, they're welcome to do so. But suddenly, a lot of my videos are starting to get tagged with this copyright issue. It's important to understand that by people claiming that all these events are hoaxes, the media will point to those people and say, these people are deniers. They're denying events in which real people suffered, real people got killed, families are grieving, etc., etc., etc. It was all a bait and switch, which I pointed out, and I will provide the links for that video and the video before it, where I go into detail about this, because it seemed to me that it was all this information was too easy to access. Oh, here's an ad from Craigslist saying they need crisis actors before this particular event. Here's a outtake of video of some crisis actors talking about their life and laughing it up and making a home movie prior to them coming on the major news media and simulating crying and being in a state of bereavement, etc., etc., right? All that was put out there as breadcrumbs, as a trail for a lot of these truthers to follow. So now the mainstream media can say, the lamestream media can say, oh, these people, they believe all these events are hoaxed. when in actual fact, in some of them, people were really killed, okay? So, here, let me read you what they sent to me. Limited features for certain videos. Hate speech is not allowed on YouTube. We remove content promoting violence or hatred against individuals or groups based on certain attributes. YouTube also doesn't allow content intended to praise, promote, or aid violent criminal organizations. Oh, you mean like the U.S. military, which is bombing all these countries all around the world? Content that doesn't violate our policies, but is close to the removal line and could be offensive to some viewers, may have some features disabled. This may include the following. This is not a complete list. Item: inflammatory, religious, or supremacist content without a direct call to violence or a primary purpose of promoting hatred. Oh, I just talked earlier about Southern Poverty Law Center identifying the Family Research Council as a hate group, and one of their whack job followers of Southern Poverty Law Center wants to go commit mass murder against all the members of the Family Research Council. But that's okay. That's okay. Here's another item. Conspiracy theories ascribing evil, corrupt, or malicious intent to individuals or groups based on certain attributes. I'll read that again. Conspiracy theories ascribing evil, corrupt, or malicious intent to individuals or groups based on certain attributes. I wonder what clan or tribe they're referring to there. And finally, videos denying, that's a key word, and I talked about this earlier, videos denying that a well-documented violent event took place. Now, many of us have seen the videos coming out of Mandalay Bay. Helicopters flying around, helicopters with shooters inside the windows. Oh no, we're supposed to believe that one guy hauled all that gear, all that war-making stuff up to the floor, and he made repeated trips, and never once did the CCTV pick that up. We're supposed to believe that, right? But we're not supposed to believe all the video that's come out of all the shooters and all that. But Mandalay Bay was a classic example of a hybrid event. The still images you see are clearly crisis actors. Those are a bunch of fakes and frauds. Nobody is shooting at them. The people hiding and cowering, those were not real victims. That was all staged. But what they did was they saturated the internet with all those images, and all these gullible people just took it on board. This proves, quote-unquote, that Mandalay Bay was not a real terrorist or black op event. Of course they can conceal and cover up all the deaths. They do that all the time. People are getting slaughtered all around the world in this endless war on terror. We never hear about them. So it's too simple to prevent any real news coming out about the real casualties coming out of Mandalay Bay in our example, or Manchester in our example. Okay? So again, I'll read that sentence because it's absolutely key to understanding all this. Videos denying that a well-documented violent event took place, setting aside the fact that the corporate media are pathological liars and they lie about everything anyway, okay? What they've done is they've crafted this narrative that, oh, all these people are claiming these things are hoaxes. And they're evil people, they have no hearts, they have no souls, they don't care about the feelings of the families affected. They're deniers. They're deniers. Denying that a well-documented violent event took place, and of course, it's their version of events. Be it Christchurch, be it Sandy Hook, be it Aurora, Colorado, whatever the case may be. It's simply foolish to take on board at face value anything the corporate media says when it comes to issues dealing with high emotion on the one hand connected to gun control events. High emotion, anything of a high emotional content in the media, you have to back up and say, whoa, whoa, whoa. What's this really all about? And now we're just supposed to take on board what happened in Christchurch. We're supposed to take on board everything they tell us. Otherwise, we're deniers. You see how that works? Now, my videos for Manchester laid out the whole basic concept of creating all these hoaxes, easily identifiable hoaxes in the past, and then they pull the rug, they do a bait and switch, they change the script. And now they're using Christchurch as an excuse to shut down a lot of content on the internet, okay? Including some of my content. Restricting some of my videos, which to me is 100% racist. So in the second part of this segment, the members section, I'm going to talk about a bit about Christchurch. Interesting how the lady who's the prime minister, president, whatever the hell she is, figurehead, puppet in New Zealand, a few years back, the Zionist media were painting her as an anti-Semite. They were calling her a Israel hater, an anti-Semite. And that was just to establish her bona fides, actually, just to make it seem like, oh, she's someone who is an anti-Semite, right? Now, she's running around wearing Arab headdress for women, and basically paving the way for Sharia to be the law of the land, at least for the commoners in New Zealand. Someone pointed out to me that so many of the elite have gone to New Zealand. I guess maybe they know something about possible potential upheavals or unrest or cataclysms or something affecting the Northern Hemisphere. So a lot of them, including James Cameron, the director and producer of the Titanic, they fled to New Zealand and set up these huge estates for themselves with state-of-the-art security work and bodyguards and all that stuff. So it makes perfect sense from that standpoint that the elite, so-called, who fled to New Zealand and taken up residence in New Zealand, that they would want the commoners in New Zealand to be disarmed and to be under constant predation and attack from all these foreigners that are going to be brought in. I mean, when the president, prime minister, whatever hell figurehead this woman is walking around with a hijab and basically acting like a female Muslim. I mean, and then just a few years before, the Zionist media are painting her as an anti-Semite, right? Oh yeah, she's a real anti-Semite. In the wake of Christchurch, I think that's ridiculous. So, I'm going to talk a tiny bit about Christchurch, but I'm going to talk more about what happened to David Icke and other things in the members section. So, thank you for listening. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do here in the Cosmic Switchboard Show, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.